Hello, I'm William Seaman. Welcome to the second half of our conversation with Israeli columnist and political analyst Tanya Reinhardt. This is a KABU Public Affairs special series on Israel-Palestine, focused on the recent Israeli evacuation from Gaza. Tanya Reinhardt is professor of linguistics at Tel Aviv University and at Utrecht University in Holland. She publishes a regular column on Israeli political affairs for the Hebrew language daily Yediot Aranot, and she is author of a book which should be required reading for anyone interested in these topics, Israel-Palestine, How to End the War of 1948. We rejoin our conversation with Tanya Reinhardt as we continue to explore the motivations and consequences of the Israeli evacuation from Gaza. Well, I wonder if we could talk a little bit more broadly about this question of the evacuation of Gaza, even though this may have been the key to understanding why Sharon did, in fact, evacuate the settlers from Gaza, that is, the U.S. pressure. It does seem to solve an issue that has come up in other discussions of why Israel's policy has shifted on Gaza and has finally withdrawn these settlers that have been there for quite a long time. And that is what's euphemistically referred to as a demographic problem in Israel, and that is very large Palestinian populations within territories that Israel has been occupying for, well, since 67. This, of course, is still a problem in the West Bank, and the idea of so-called Gaza first has been on the table for a long time. Do you think that Sharon sees this as a significant setback? I mean, it may well be that he had to be pressured to get out of Gaza, but does he see this as a significant setback, or rather is he turning it into an opportunity in terms of expanded and more aggressive policies with respect to the settlements in the West Bank?
No, that's obvious, and he's saying that. He's saying that, obviously, that this is the last, that this would enable us to keep the West Bank settlements, and mainly the... One thing that happened from the start was that the condition for them that Israel put to the U.S. for its planned evacuation was a completion of the wall in the West Bank, which is the one thing that they've done very efficiently. So that is clear that he chose Gaza because, obviously, when he declared he will evacuate Gaza, he must have also taken into account the possibility that he will have to do that. Right? It's not guaranteed that you can forever just breach all your agreements and get away with this. So obviously that is the smallest sacrifice in order to keep the rest. All I'm saying is that up to Sharon, he wouldn't have given up also Gaza, because there's a very serious question of how to maintain the occupation. And to begin with, Israel never planned. So if you are asking about the demographic issue, that would be relevant if Israel really ended the occupation of Gaza and let Gaza complete freedom, and then they are not in the responsibility of Israel. All agreements, the evacuation plan to begin with stated that Israel would maintain full control of Gaza. Gaza will be isolated from the sea and from Egypt and fully controlled by Israel. So Israel is not giving up the occupation of Gaza, in fact. It's only taking out the settlements. So I don't see that the demographic issue could be. In any case, it's clear that the real battle is only beginning. And first, Israel did not end its occupation in Gaza. And they have a very good reason, because Sharon's fear is that if he really opens Gaza to the world and gives Gaza some sort of independence, they would be the center of Palestinian resistance. That would be a big boost to the Palestinian movement that will keep demanding also full fulfillment of UN resolutions and Israel getting out of the territory. So he's not giving up control of Gaza, right? It's really gaining some international bonus. And it in my view, it's significant because Gaza is the most crowded strip of land in the world, and giving back a third of the land to the Palestinians is a positive thing, right? But the occupation goes on.
So as you say, the occupation goes on in spite of the fact that these settlers have been evacuated from these settlements in Gaza. When you say the occupation continues, does this mean that Israeli troops are very likely to go back into Gaza, or are you referring to, for example, control of the borders, and perhaps this also includes the border with Egypt?
Right. The plan of the Gaza withdrawal, as appeared in the Israeli media well over a year ago, says also that Israel keeps the right to enter to military operations inside Gaza, all quoted in language of security in order to protect its security and so on. But also, it in the original plan, Israel intends to keep the strip along the border with Egypt. That's another area of debate currently with the U.S. administration, but I'm not sure how persistent the U.S. will be about this point. So what remains to be seen is what will happen in the coming few months in Gaza itself. I'm pretty sure that as far as Israel is concerned, they will try to have a military operations both there and in the West Bank. Well, in the West Bank, there was just this week a big assassination in Tulkarem. But sticking to Gaza, Israel's plan is, on the one hand, and that was also in the Israeli papers, right from the start, Eland, who is the Giora Eland, he was in charge of the disengagement office and plan. And he explained right from the start that once we carry out the disengagement, we would not be formally occupiers. So Israel's plan is that the Gaza Strip would be declared no longer occupied, but it would still be fully military controlled by Israel. And the idea is clear, because by the Geneva Conventions, the occupier is responsible for the occupied people. So he's responsible for every aspect of their well-being, and specifically their nutrition, their healthcare, their quality of life, their property. This is all the responsibility of the occupier. If Israel manages to get this special status to Gaza, this would mean it could still do whatever it does militarily inside Gaza and keep suffocating the Palestinians there and pushing them to starvation and poverty. But at the same time, it would all become legal, because they are not occupiers.
How do you see the Palestinian Authority responding to this turn of events? If indeed this occupation is continuing in all but name, what do you think the options are for the Palestinian Authority, and what do you think they're actually going to be doing in this situation?
Well, they have already declared that they oppose to Israel is planning to ask the UN to declare that occupation is, I don't know if they will do it, these are just news of the last week, planning to ask the UN declaring that the occupation is over, and the Palestinian Authority has already declared its opposition. So the occupation is not over until it's over, if indeed Israel gets out completely and is not allowed to get in, and the Palestinians are free to in Gaza, are free to have their contacts with whoever they want, you may declare the occupation over, but not just getting out the settlements is not doing that. So the Palestinians are saying all that all the time, and as part of this, what appears to be a more serious attitude of the U.S., they U.S. administration right now is saying that Israel should give more freedom to Gaza. But I think the big show that the U.S. needed has happened already, and I don't know if we can expect them to. Right now, the U.S., this week, the U.S., first Rice and then Bush, they keep repeating that now that Sharon disengaged, the Palestinians have to start fighting the terror organizations. So far, right now, it seems that that's it for a while, but we cannot know. This aspect is what we don't know.
You mentioned that we've just seen a big show, and I wonder if we could wrap up this interview with the discussion of how these events have been covered in the commercial media. Now, of course, you're in Holland, so I don't know what media you see.
Yeah, but the media is one media all over the world. There's always one media. I don't think there's a difference, substantial difference, between European and American.
And what's your view of how these events have been covered in the commercial media worldwide?
Yeah, that's the shared themes are, first, the heroic gesture of Sharon. Sharon is a real man of peace who is facing opposition from inside, but he's determined to start ending the occupation, and he has done this big act for peace. Then the focus is on the big sacrifice of the Israelis, right? It's the victims of this event seem to be the settlers who were evacuated from their homes, and there's very little mention of how many Palestinians lost their homes over the years of occupation, and not just if you just take since the disengagement plan, Israel still kept destroying hundreds of houses in the Gaza Strip, so probably more Palestinian houses were destroyed in Gaza than ever than the settlers. And there's very little talk of what the settlers were doing that there to begin with and what type of misery they were causing to their neighbors. But with all this said, I think you could say that also this cheerful tone that which the event is described with cheerful tone. There is a real feeling of relief that this is happening. I think this is true for both European and American media. There is also a sense of relief, and I think if you look under just the mainstream, there is big readiness in the world to see Israel getting out from all of the territories and not just from Gaza. And you get the feeling that in some of the reports or in the BBC, and you get the feeling that there is a hope it's only the first step, that it would not be the last step.
So in that respect, I mean, that is something of a positive outcome, that the withdrawal from Gaza has, in a sense, encouraged the view that this is a first step.
That it's possible. The view that it's actually a first step is dangerous, because if you leave it up to Israel, that is not the first step, it's the last step. But it showed that it's possible, and I think on this, the people, the view of many people in the world is that it should be the first step, that if Israel got out of some settlements, it's something that never happened before in the history of the occupation of the Palestinian areas, that it evacuated settlements on Palestinian land, that it can continue. Also, I think if what I said here, if what I said about the U.S. this time putting real pressure, I think this is a very significant thing to the anti-war movement in general, because what it means is the struggle against Bush policy and the resistance to this constant war are making things more difficult. And then there should be some concession somewhere to the opposition. And if the concession is on Palestine, it's a big achievement to the anti-war movement. And I think in this sense, it is. The situation is slightly more optimistic than it was a few months ago.
Well, I want to give you a chance to wrap up this interview with any thoughts that you have that you want in particular a U.S. audience to hear. And it could have, of course, to do with this Gaza pullout, but it could have more generally to do with the Israel-Palestine conflict.
I think what I just said was my message to... I believe that... I repeat what I just said, because this is, I think, what I have to say to the U.S. audience. I think the encouraging lesson of this event, these events, is that struggle is paying off. So first, the Palestinian cause, although it was dismissed from the media, although it is ignored, it's still there. People are still... Palestine is still remembered. And I believe that what we see here is that the struggle on Iraq and the Middle East is connected to the struggle on Palestine. These are the two occupations, the Iraq occupation and the occupation of Palestine, should end. And the struggle to end the one is always also helping the struggle to end the other.
Professor Reinhardt, thank you very much for spending this time with us today.
Okay, thank you.
As a closing segment to these series of programs looking back on the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, we have with us today Mr. Josh Rubner, the grassroots advocacy coordinator of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Mr. Rubner, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Will.
First off, perhaps you could give us a brief description of your organization, its work, and its history.
Sure. The U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation is a 3-year-old coalition of more than 200 U.S.-based organizations working together to end U.S. support for Israel's military occupation of the Palestinian West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza Strip, and working to change U.S. policy towards Israel and Palestine to support a just peace that's based on human rights and international law.
Now, we've been talking about the Gaza withdrawal. What is your organization's perspective on these events? And more specifically, what role do you see the U.S. as having played, and what role do you see the U.S. public playing with respect to this conflict?
Well, it's definitely a positive step that the settlers in the Gaza Strip have been evacuated and that Israel is in the process right now of dismantling the settlements and the military bases that it had established on this Palestinian territory in contravention of international law. Israel had been undergoing this settlement drive in the West Bank and Gaza for the past 30-odd years, which is illegal according to international law, which says that you cannot move your population into the territory that you're militarily occupying. So it's positive that Israel finally complied with international law in terms of removing the settlers from the Gaza Strip. But I don't believe that the removal of the settlers will in any way end the military occupation of Gaza. In fact, Israel will still be maintaining a full-scale air, land, and water siege on the Gaza Strip. Trade between the Gaza Strip and the West Bank will be virtually impossible, if not completely impossible, and Palestinians will still be living and subjected to a very harsh siege.
What role do you see the United States government playing, both in terms of the events leading up to this withdrawal of the settlements and in terms of the ongoing conflict, in terms of some kind of genuine peace process and a settlement of the Israel-Palestine conflict?
Well, the United States has been very supportive of Israel's evacuation of settlements in the Gaza Strip, but I don't think that this withdrawal and this U.S. support for it is really that significant. What's more important is the fact that Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, with U.S. acquiescence, is using the Gaza disengagement plan basically as a smokescreen for consolidating and expanding Israel's control over the Palestinian West Bank. Only in the last couple of weeks since the settlers were removed, Israel has announced plans to expropriate more land around the West Bank settlement of Maale Adumim, which is east of Jerusalem, and basically the plans would bisect the West Bank into two, making movement of Palestinians from the northern part into the southern part impossible. So there's been a lot more settlement expansion plans announced, a lot more land expropriation, and for Israel, the West Bank has always been a far greater prize than the Gaza Strip. And in 2004, when Ariel Sharon came to the White House, he exchanged diplomatic letters with George Bush, in which the U.S. president basically acquiesced in Israel's annexing of large settlement blocks to Israel from the West Bank.
What then are the prospects for a shift in U.S. policy on these issues?
I think a shift will be very difficult. It's something that our group is working very hard on, but we confront a lot of very powerful interests, including the arms industry, which has a vested interest in keeping this conflict going because it gets more than a $3 billion subsidy to Israel alone every year, to Israel and Egypt alone every year. There is some very right-wing Jewish American organizations which are hawking for Israel's continued control and dominance over the Palestinian people. And, of course, you have a growing Christian evangelical fundamentalist base that is very much to the right of Ariel Sharon on these issues.
What is the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation? What is your strategy in terms of confronting these interests that support the continued occupation and, in fact, expansion of that occupation?
Well, we're educating and organizing and trying to mobilize people in this country to take action because their tax dollars are being used to support human rights violations against the Palestinian people on a daily basis. It's our tax dollars in the form of military aid and economic aid which basically enable Israel to maintain its illegal military occupation of the Palestinian people. So we're letting folks know in this country that this is what their tax dollars are going to, and if they want to plug in to join us to try to change things, we are working on legislative track, we're working on a media track, we're working on a divestment and boycott track, Our primary focus right now is increasing the pressure on the Caterpillar Corporation to end its sales of militarized bulldozers to the Israeli army. This is already a global campaign that's underway, and these Caterpillar bulldozers are being used by Israel to destroy Palestinian homes, to destroy Palestinian agricultural land and infrastructure, to build the illegal settlements, and to build this illegal wall through the West Bank, which the International Court of Justice declared to be illegal last year.
Well, you've talked a little bit about this Caterpillar campaign. Could you describe the other components of your work? You mentioned a media component and a legislative component. What about the legislative component of your work?
Sure. We ask citizens and residents of the United States to contact their elected representatives to let them know how they feel about U.S. policy towards Israel, Palestine. Our current campaign in terms of legislative action is we're asking folks to contact their members of Congress to have them oppose Israel's request for $2.2 billion. This is on top of Israel's annual $3 billion package that they receive. Israel has requested $2.2 billion to cover some of the expenses from the Gaza disengagement. And I think it's outrageous at a time when our own citizens in the Gulf Coast are in desperate need of government aid, that our government would even consider giving money, a huge amount of money, to Israel to basically reward it for 38 years of military occupation.
And how about the media component of your work?
We're working on a grassroots level to create better coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in U.S. papers. The conflict is often portrayed as either it's two even parties and both are wrong, or that Israel is the poor, defenseless victim in this conflict, whereas, in fact, Israel is the aggressor, and Palestinian victimization is often very much downplayed in the U.S. press, creating a very slanted, very biased perception that most people in this country buy into.
How do you propose, or how are you going about countering that skewed perspective on the conflict?
Well, we put out a lot of grassroots educational material. If folks are interested more in some of the details of the disengagement plan from Gaza, for example, you can go to our website and download a fact sheet. We have about a dozen fact sheets available on our website, so that's a good way to start learning more about it. And our website is www.endtheoccupation.org.
You've described three different components. I wonder if we could turn back to this question of the Caterpillar campaign. Is that a part of a broader divestment campaign that your organization is working on?
It is. We've supported divestment as a tactic for ending U.S. support, especially corporate support, for Israel's military occupation. In addition to Caterpillar, there are military contractors and weapons makers that are literally making a profit off of the suffering of the Palestinian people. And their profits are being made by Israel perpetuating a very terrible, very brutal military occupation on the Palestinian people. So if these corporations aren't going to take responsibility for their behavior, if they're going to profit off of human rights abuses, then it's the obligation of people in this country to hold these corporations to account and to divest from any investments in these corporations and to boycott them when they sell consumer products. Caterpillar, for example, has toys. They have hats. I know most people don't go around buying bulldozers and such things, but Caterpillar can be boycotted on the consumer level through these products as well.
What's the progress on that particular campaign? Do you think it's moving forward with some success, or do you see it facing some challenges on its own?
No doubt there are a lot of challenges. Caterpillar is a Fortune 500 company, very powerful, throws a lot of money around in the political system. But there's a city in Ireland, Limerick, whose city council is debating right now whether to call the city the first Caterpillar-free city because of its human rights violations in Palestine. During the last corporate meeting of Caterpillar, their annual shareholder meeting last year in April, the entire meeting was dominated by a discussion of Caterpillar bulldozer sales to Israel. And one organization that's part of our coalition, Jewish Voice for Peace, brought forward a shareholder resolution asking the corporation to investigate its policies of sales towards Israel. So we're definitely making some progress. I think Caterpillar will start to rethink its sales of these bulldozers to Israel when churches, when unions and so forth start saying that they will no longer use Caterpillar equipment because this corporation is making profits off of the suffering of Palestinians.
Well, I want to give you a chance to summarize the work that you're doing, and if you have a particular message you have for our listeners in terms of what you feel, especially a U.S. audience, a U.S.-based audience, what our responsibility is with respect to this conflict.
Sure. We have a very, very deep responsibility towards resolving this conflict because our country has been arming and equipping and providing economic aid and diplomatic support for Israel's treatment, terrible treatment, of the Palestinian people for the last 38 years of military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. And if we want to put our money where our mouth is, so to speak, in terms of promoting freedom, in terms of promoting democracy around the world, then the best way we can do that, I think, and the most urgent way we can do that is to end our country's support for Israel's military occupation so that the Palestinian people can live free from military occupation, live in dignity, and live in self-determination.
And we've been listening to Mr. Josh Rubner, the Grassroots Advocacy Coordinator of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. Mr. Rubner, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that concludes this series of KBOO Public Affairs programs looking back on the Israeli evacuation from Gaza. We spoke with Jeff Halper, coordinator of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, Israeli historian Dr. Ilan Pape, columnist and analyst Professor Tanya Reinhart, and with Josh Rubner of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. If you'd like copies of any of these programs, please contact the station. What station is that? Why, of course, you've been tuned to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and 100.7 FM in the Willamette Valley. I'm William Seaman, your host. Thank you for listening.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cascadia Homes Realtors, presenting a First Friday Art Quest show of anti-corporate and abstract art by Ryan Sherman, Mandela art by Christine Claringbold, and live Brazilian music from Rio Nights. Friday, January 6th. From 6:30 to 9 p.m. at 7824 Southeast 13th Avenue near the Selwood Library. Details at CascadiaHomes.com.
Join Out Loud, KBOO's queer news and public affairs show, on Tuesday, January 10th at 6 p.m. as we host Humble Divas, Elizabeth Lavenue and Mark Steering, who call themselves two queer singing Sagittarians. Humble Divas will present pieces from their performance titled Civil Disunion, a one-hour musical comedy that explores the challenges and humor of our fractured political climate. Come laugh with us as we forge the foibles of gay marriage and parenting, bulldoze the blatant blunders of Bush, and dance the dichotomy of our desires on Out Loud, Tuesday, January 10th at 6 p.m.
You're gonna light me up yourself, 'cause I said so.